From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Nisha Burton creates in a myriad of ways: films, marketing, public speaking, writing. I know the list is more than that, so thank you, Nisha, for being on the Oregon Grapevine.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with film. Would you please talk a little about the world of film and bringing it to Oregon and your piece of it, why it matters?
Absolutely, yeah. So I have lived in Oregon most of my life now. I moved here when I was starting high school and really found my love for film early on when I was 14 years old, when I was a freshman in high school. And so Oregon has always been a very supportive place for me to nourish and foster my film career. And it's funny, when I was in high school, I wound up taking all of the classes, the film classes at SOU, because they didn't have as many at the Ashland High School. And so they jokingly called me one of the youngest alumni of SOU, which I like that title. I think I still probably have it even, of the film department there. And really from that stage of being so encouraged in my film career, as well as with the Ashland Film Festival, having my films in the festival, I was one of the first winners of the launch program, which is for high school and younger students. So I was very encouraged in being a filmmaker, and I knew that's really what I wanted to do. I went away for college to study film, and then I moved back to Oregon. I actually finished at the University of Oregon studying film and digital arts, which is what expanded my skill set out into the other areas we'll talk about too. Then being in Oregon as a filmmaker, I worked in narrative, but then really focused in on documentary filmmaking and being able to tell some of the histories of Oregon itself, as well as focus in on what was going on in our communities, what was impacting our area. And so I made a few films. The first one in like this kind of series and focus on Oregon and its history was called The Separation Myth. And that was about the unfortunate history of Oregon being founded as an exclusionary state. So looking to exclude people of color from living here, basically, in different ways that manifested, but how that history kind of impacted the current experiences of people of color in Oregon. Another one that I did was about the mural here in Ashland. That's a mural between here and the sister city of Guanajuato, Mexico, and how that mural really brought people from diverse backgrounds together to create and to have something that was a unifying force rather than a divisive one. That was called The Walls We Create. And then more recently, I made one about the fires that happened here in Southern Oregon and how they, you know, as we're seeing in many places now, but they were so devastating and really destroyed a lot of the city of talent and Phoenix, and it impacted people who were already low income and struggling to live here in the area. And so the focus on that was talking to those people, talking to the residents that had been impacted, and thinking about how to rebuild in a way that didn't push people further out, but actually helped them to have ownership of their homes, of their space, you know, as it got rebuilt.
As you make these documentaries and talk to people around them, how do you get people to watch them? And how do you get people to have, and are there conversations around them? And how does that process work?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, as a documentary filmmaker, yes, you want your films to get out there. And there's so much media and content nowadays that it can be hard to get eyes on your projects. But with my projects specifically, and because they are so focused in Oregon, I've done a lot of, on the educational side, going to schools and universities, different educational places, and showing them and then facilitating a discussion afterwards about them. Also just public screenings that are like that as well. And then having them in film festivals is a really big way to be able to get the films out there. And all the films that I mentioned have been in numerous film festivals and a lot of regional film festivals too, that then people in the different areas and up in Portland and all around the state can see these films and engage with them. And so that's a really great way as a filmmaker to get them out there. And then after that, I put them online for free oftentimes to be able to be shown forever afterwards. And one other project that I didn't mention, but it's called Finding Home at the Mims. And that was about in Eugene, Oregon, the Mims House, which was one of the places that Black people, residents, or travelers could stay in Eugene when they couldn't stay anywhere else. And that was a part of the Oregon Humanities, I believe the program or the curation of films that they made was called This Land, and it was looking at different experiences of people of color in the state. And so that one got out through their channels as well. And the one about the fires that I was talking about had a really beautiful special on Southern Oregon PBS where they also had the mayor speak and another program as an interview with me as a full hour-long program along with the film. So yeah, so there's lots of ways to get them out there, and I'm happy that they have had the reach that they have to be able to be seen by many people.
As you start on this project, I presume you have an idea. You go in and you want to do the fires, or you want to do the Mims House, and I'm assuming you have some ideas about maybe where that's going to go. Do you find as you make them that actually it went someplace else?
Yeah, totally. With documentary, every time it really is. You have your ideas, but the film comes together in the editing stage. And so you do the interviews, you gather the materials, and you're starting to guide the flow of the story. But then once you get into the edit, you see what you have there. And a lot of times, things and angles that you weren't originally thinking about pop out, or you're like, oh, actually, this interview here, where this person said this, is leading me down a whole direction that I hadn't thought of in the beginning. And so I feel like that's a lot of the magic of documentary filmmaking. Whereas with narrative filmmaking, there still can be some shifts, but you have a pretty clear idea at the beginning what you want the end product to be. And with documentary, it's kind of a co-evolution, and it is a lot about your interviewees too and what they bring to the conversation. And with historical documentaries, it can be a little bit more like you know the direction you're going because it's happened already. But with all of the pieces that I've done, yes, a lot of it has been shaped by what the people that I'm speaking with talk about and what insights they bring, and then the multiple voices and how to weave those together and what births out of that. And so it's really fun that way.
I know another one of your interests and pieces of expertise has to do with emerging technology. And for people of my generation and others, I think AI particularly can be a trigger word of like, oh my, what is that? It's taking over the world or whatever. Obviously, with all of these things, there are numerous aspects to them, some darker, some lighter. So I'd love you to talk a little bit about AI. What is it? In terms of how you use it, and maybe how people should come to understand that it's not really plagiarizing stories, it's not really taking over the world in a necessarily negative way.
After graduating from college and having the experience both in filmmaking as well as digital arts, and with that program, I did a lot of interactive media too. I co-founded a creative agency with my friend, then who became my business partner. And we first started out specializing in traditional branding and marketing, video production, et cetera. But then we really saw an opportunity to move into specializing in emerging and immersive technologies. And so we began, and this was more than 10 years ago now. We were based in Portland, and we began with focusing on virtual reality and augmented reality and helping businesses, companies, various industries implement custom virtual reality and/or augmented reality solutions for their business needs. With that, really seeing, and a lot of at that time too, because it wasn't as much in the mainstream awareness of what virtual reality or augmented reality are. And now it's a little bit more, but there's still some education to be done. We would always be talking about how the technologies could best be used. And we would encounter fear similarly, about virtual reality and, oh, is everybody just going to be shut off in their screens and have their phones basically glued to their faces? And so at that time, it was also a lot about educating and talking about, yes, it's a tool and it can be used multiple ways. And, tools can be used for harm as well as amazing good. But we ran a monthly event series called Design Reality, where we would bring people together around certain subject matters like entertainment, education, real estate, and how those industries could be impacted by virtual reality and augmented reality and how they could benefit from those technologies. And so sharing hope and good use cases of like, hey, we know you're afraid of these things, but did you ever think about how, for example, virtual reality surgical training could help surgeons to get better at their jobs without having the high expense and overhead of lots of cadavers to work on with lots of like trial and error. And so that's just like one example of how, yeah, how the tools can be used for good as well. And so with that, now moving into this phase, this iteration of where technology is at, AI is the thing that is on the tip of everybody's tongue and what everybody's thinking about because it is poised to and already is impacting so many industries. And for myself, too, coming from a creative background in filmmaking, I think even though I've been in this tech field, seeing how much it's already impacting creative industries and how that was really first, was surprising to me in the beginning. And so now a lot of it is a similar conversation, although evolved, about how the tools can be used for good and bad, and how we need to bring in creators from various backgrounds to be thinking about and utilizing these technologies in the beginning so that then it really shapes the path and the direction that we're going with it all. And I'm working on a project currently that is about the near future of AI, and it's an immersive dome experience, which is kind of like a planetarium experience, is what a lot of people have their first immersive dome journey with. And it's bringing together communities of people to one, see the story of these two women from the near future that are coming back to our time because it really is a turning point, and they're asking us to help think about and envision what a more positive future with these technologies could look like. And then again, because it's in the immersive dome, everybody's there together and they're collectively shaping the narrative by what they're saying and what they're voting on and which direction they want the story to go. So it's a way to get people envisioning the best case scenarios, because I feel like a lot of our media is focused when it comes to technology on the dystopic views and the worst case scenarios. And while that's important to have in our collective mind, so we try and steer away from that, I feel like by and large, a lot of times we're lacking what we want to steer towards as far as a view version of the future that we want to live in. And these technologies are here, they're not going anywhere, they're moving very quickly. And so the more people that can be saying and thinking about what they want the technologies to do, the better.
Do you have thoughts about people who say, look, AI, we're kind of by using it the way we're using it, we're training it to do these things, and we're training it to be do these things even better. And so therefore, we as humans are really kind of working ourselves out of doing these things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's definitely a valid anxiety, I don't know, fear. At the same time, we are in a time when people do need to be thinking about, and it's funny coming from my background of working in many fields, it is a time where like mastery of a certain skill and specialization in some industries, at least, and in some areas, is going to be shifting. And I feel like that is a hard part of reality right now, because people have spent many years specializing and mastering a specific skill set. And with AI coming in, for certain jobs, it will be able to eventually do that skill set. And so then, yes, the person that is specialized in that area is going to have to pivot and shift. And so I think now I talk to people a lot about it's a good time to expand your repertoire of what you're doing and to see how to become a little bit more agile in your field. And yet, at this moment in time, too, it's a beautiful opportunity to really optimize and kind of like exponentially move forward your creativity and your workflow with AI. So rather than looking at it as the total enemy, being able to integrate it into whatever you're working on and doing can make things so much easier, can make them move quicker, and can really expand your creativity. I'll give an example from my own work as a filmmaker. I've been able to use AI a lot to help me. Like in each stage of the process. So in the stage of coming up with the pitch and the fundraising materials and all of that, taking my ideas, putting them all out there, and then having help to articulate them and to organize them has been so helpful. And then in the story stage too, it's not about having AI do the thing for you, which I think is what a lot of people worry about. Like, I just want AI to write my film for me. But rather, it's more about, again, working back and forth with it to be able to expand on and iterate on your ideas and think of certain plot points that you might need help with. So back to the story that I was talking about with the dome experience, I wanted it to be in the near future, and there was something going on with the cloud server farm in the town itself that this story is set that was hurting the residents. And it's a mysterious illness that it's causing. So I put in those plot points. Again, that's like coming from me as the human, right? And then to AI, I was like, what are some potential environmental and health impacts that could come from a cloud server farm and all that processing going on? And it came up with amazing ideas and like grounded in science and did research for me that would take me so much longer to do on my own. So that's just one example of like at that stage of story development. And then when you're creating pitch materials, you can generate images and video to really be able to sell the concept to people. What I encourage people at this stage is to really like one, look at how they can use AI to their benefit in their current workflow. And I feel like for every industry, there is an opportunity there. And then also thinking about, yeah, how can I expand my skill set right now, anticipating that in the near or a little bit far off future, my particular job may be altered and shifted.
Do you have an easy suggestion for someone who doesn't really know anything about it or how to use it or anything about it, except for that every time you turn on your computer on Google, it asks you if you want to ask AI to help you, etc. Do you have an idea of where maybe the first place is to delve, to not be freaked out, but to understand it?
I mean, I think a cool thing about AI that is different than virtual reality, when I'm working in those fields and trying to get people excited about and onboarded into the space, is that with virtual reality, there's still quite a barrier to entry because people need to have a headset, put it on, know how to navigate it, et cetera. They've made it a lot easier, than it used to be even a few years ago. But with AI, anybody can access it right from their computers. And it's very intuitive and it's quite easy to interface a lot of them. And so I think that's made it why it's one of the reasons why it's moved so quickly and why it's had such a mass adoption. Whereas virtual reality and augmented reality to some degrees has been a little bit slower to pick up. And there's been different cycles of people saying, now's the time for VR, and then it'll come and go. So with AI, I think the first places to go, which most people know, are ChatGPT or Claude. And both of those are spaces where you can go and, again, like I was talking about, put in your text, just type it out like you would in a Google search, and then have either a conversation or help to develop out materials, help to troubleshoot things, et cetera. So there's so many uses. But the interface is so easy. It's free. There's paid versions, but they're free to access. And then you can kind of just like take off and go from that place. And there's layers and layers and layers of how deep you can get with your prompting and how deep you can get with knowing how to utilize the tools. But at the very surface layer, it's no harder than just typing a question into Google. But then the answers you get are so much more specific and rich and in a conversational language.
I want to shift gears a little and talk about another one of the interests that you have or expertises that you have, which is lucid dreaming, which a lot of people don't know even know what that is. Some people do know what that is. So if you'd give a little kind of primer on what it is and why you are interested, kind of where you've gone with it.
It's fun to have these kind of three pathways of my life and my career, and they do interweave sometimes, and sometimes they're completely separate as well. But lucid dreaming is amazing because it's kind of an inner technology that we all have access to, but not many people know how to engage or how to turn that part of their dream world on. A lucid dream is one in which you know beyond a doubt that you're dreaming within the dream. So many people have had the experience of having a dream where they kind of had a slight inkling that they might be dreaming, or maybe when they wake up after the dream, they're like, oh, actually, I think I kind of knew that that was a dream, or very vivid dreams too. And all of those things are wonderful and kind of steps towards lucid dreaming, but they're not fully lucid dreams. A fully lucid dream is one where that realization of, wait a minute, could I be dreaming? And then in having some way of clicking on, and there's techniques you can do to click on the lucid dream, or sometimes it'll just happen spontaneously for people, but then they have the aha moment of, wait a minute, yes, I am dreaming. And then once that clicks on, the quality of the dream changes entirely because you become so much more present and aware of the dream as a dream. Everything feels very real as waking reality. Your senses turn on in a way that often aren't on in your non-lucid dreams. And then you have this level of agency within the dream because you know it's a dream, then you can decide and choose what pathways you want to take and how you want to engage with the dream material, knowing that it is a dream. That's kind of a definition of lucid dreaming. And yeah, it's a wonderful, really empowering experience. And that's an aspect of what I do is teach people how to have lucid dreams. I created an oracle deck and book that's a fun, non-linear way to learn about lucid dreaming. Because as I was teaching, I encountered a lot of people that would say, oh, yeah, I had a few lucid dreams once. I read a book about it, but then I kind of fell off the practice. And so the oracle deck is a way, again, just by pulling cards, that you can be guided to specific lessons around lucid dreaming and really engage with it in a non-linear way, because that's how the dream time is a lot of times. And then it has guidance for waking reality too. So it integrates the two worlds.
Why should a person learn how to lucid dream?
There's so many different angles to come at it from, which is what I really like about it, that it doesn't need to be alienating depending on what somebody's worldview is or how they view the dream time. So there's the psychological angle that you can look at it from, where lucid dreaming provides an opportunity to directly engage with and communicate with your subconscious mind, to view it, to see what's going on in there in a way where you have conscious awareness that you don't when you're just immersed in the dream material in a non-lucid state. And so then you can go in there and talk to your inner child and say, you know, this thing that happened to us back then, like, let's have this dialogue about it. It can be very healing, dealing with fears and phobias in the lucid dream state. You're able to encounter and face them in a way that is, you know, challenging, definitely challenging to do in a non-lucid dream, where a lot of times you're just running from your fears. And then waking reality too, because in the dream time, a lot of times fears can be amplified too. So when you become lucid, then you can choose different ways to engage with the fears, but you can turn and face them, or you can create stronger boundaries with whatever the fear situation or person is. Or you can really just face it in a very empowered and healing way. So it's a very psychologically insightful and healing practice from that angle. From the scientific angle, it is, and it's cool because over the last probably like 20 or 30 years, there's been a lot more studies scientifically into lucid dreaming and the benefits of it. But it's very good for strengthening your memory and various neural pathways in your brain. And they even did studies where people were lucid dreamers and in their lucid dreams practicing certain skill sets. And then in waking reality, they would see that it actually translated over, that the skill had been developed out. One example that I always think of, which is kind of wild, is that they did a study with somebody where he was actually like bodybuilding in his lucid dreams and he had gained muscle mass in waking reality. So it just shows like the carryover. You're not just doing something in the dream realms, it really does translate over into waking reality. And then the third lens to look at it from is the more esoteric side of things. And, Tibetan dream yoga is a big practice where lucid dreaming is used to gain profound spiritual insight and being able to engage with the dream time, which is such a mysterious space to most people in a lucid way, then you can have very profound transformational, transcendent experiences too. So, any or all of those reasons are great reasons for people to get into lucid dreaming.
How did you find these kind of paths in your life and the work that you're doing?
I always say that I was lucky to be raised by a mom who really honored the dream time, and she's one, a therapist, but also works a lot with shadow work and trauma healing, and really encouraged me from a young age to honor my dream time and to not look at it as just a dream, but to talk about and be with the profound nature of dreams. So that primed me to, one, just be paying attention to my dream time, and then I would have spontaneous lucid dreams as a kid, as many people do. But then in my 20s, in my early 20s, I really got into lucid dreaming as a practice. And that's what it is. If you want to be like a regular lucid dreamer, like any other skill, there's these things that you do in waking reality to be training your mind to, one, question if you could be dreaming, and then checking. And there's ways that you can actually, they're called state checks, which a lot of people know the one of looking at your hand and flipping it back and forth and asking, could I be dreaming? And when you do that in waking reality, it stays the same as it would. But when you do it in a dream, it will change. You'll have extra fingers, it'll glow. So one time it turned, my hand turned into lobster claws. And so that's something that then signals to the mind, okay, I know beyond a doubt that I'm dreaming right now because this crazy thing just happened when I did the state check. And that's what can switch you into lucidity more often. So, learning those tools and techniques in my early 20s and really dedicating myself to practicing them, along with having been primed to dream and be aware of my dreams my whole life, I really clicked into lucid dreaming as a deep practice for myself and was able to move to very advanced spaces within the lucid dream realms and have lots and lots of lucid dreams and dream material to work with. Being in that and called to that, then also wanting to, because it is such a powerful tool of our minds, teach other people about it. And that's how I got into the space of creating the book and Oracle deck, and I have online classes as well that are launching really soon, and then teach at different workshops and do speaking engagements. And so, yeah, that's been my journey into it all.
What's inspiring you in your life to kind of do these films and do lucid dreaming work and just marketing and just your life path? Do you have a specific or not necessarily specific kind of inspiration that keeps you going?
When I think about the three pathways and how they work together, how they weave together, and kind of what is the common thread between all of them. My life path feels a lot about sharing stories and using the craft of storytelling in these different mediums to be able to provide new perspectives and new insight for people, and that's, seen in the film world, and just the impact that that can have on somebody's own life trajectory. So in the film world, being able, and that was my first love, really, my first passion, and I always knew I wanted to be a filmmaker from the time I was little. So seeing the potential there of it as a medium to really move people. You're kind of, in some ways, bringing people into a shared dream when they watch a film. And so being able to give people that experience of going on a journey in a short amount of time, in the length of a film, and coming out different, changed, or affirmed, and really like the deep potential for having an impact on people that I feel like other mediums don't quite have. So that's really the powerful tool of filmmaking. And then with emerging and immersive technologies, it's even amplified that much more when done well, where you're able, especially like, say, with virtual reality, to bring people that much deeper into a lived experience of this story or this, journey that you're taking them on, and really being able to guide people through transformation in that way and give people delightful, exciting, insightful experiences within those realms. And then with the lucid dreaming too, it is a lot about, again, teaching people that they have access to insight and what they're searching for a lot of times externally within themselves, turning that focus back into one's own mind, into one's own psyche, and empowering them in that way. Because I feel like a lot of times, we're seeking externally often for our own purpose, our own path, our own questions that are troubling us at night. And so, just to help people wake up to the realization that a lot of the answers they're looking for are inside of themselves, which, I think a lot of people do know, but then when you're able to engage with it through lucid dreaming, it just provides that heightened level of insight and agency that then carries forth into waking reality too, and giving them the feeling of empowerment in their lives, having experienced the level of empowerment they can have in their dreams.
Thank you so much, Nisha Burton, for being on the Oregon Grapevine and giving some insights into what you do and help people also do it. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.